content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the October 2019 issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to begin today on page 8 with Who's Who in Sports. Asia Wilson, runner, United States. Her height is 5'8". Her weight is 135 pounds. She was born May 8, 1994 in Neptune, New Jersey. Wilson won the 800 meters at the 2019 USATF Outdoor Championships in July and the 1,000 meters at the Indoor Championships this past February, giving her 10 national titles. In February, she also set the American Indoor 800-meter record, 1:58.60. Wilson already held the outdoor mark, 1:55.61, which she set in 2017, the same year she earned bronze in the 800 at the IAAF World Championships. She was a world junior champion in the 800 in 2011 and 12. Question, who is the only American woman to have won Olympic gold in the 800 meters? Answer, Madeline Manning, 1968. Next we have Khalil Mack, linebacker, Chicago Bears. His height is 6'3", his weight is 252 pounds. He was born February 22nd, 1991 in Fort Pierce, Florida. In 2018, Mack had 47 tackles and led the Bears in sacks, 12 and a half, despite suffering an ankle injury that caused him to miss two games. He was named first-team All-Pro for the third time and made his fourth Pro Bowl. Mack was the 2016 NFL Defensive Player of the Year while playing for the Raiders after finishing the season with 73 tackles, 11 sacks, and 5 forced fumbles. At the University of Buffalo, Mack broke the NCAA career record for forced fumbles, 16. Question, in what decade was Soldier Field, where the Bears plays, built? Answer, the 1920s. It opened in 1924. And finally, we have Caleb Dressel. He's a swimmer in the United States. His height is 6'3". His weight is 190 pounds. He was born August 16, 1996 in Orange Park, Florida. Dressel won a record 8 medals at the 2019 FINA World Championships, breaking the mark he tied 2 years ago when he nabbed 7. This year he won the 50 and 100 meter freestyle and the 50 and 100 meter butterfly and both 400 free relays. He took silver in both 400 medley relays. He set a world record in the 100 butterfly during a semifinal heat, 49.50. At the 2016 Olympics, Dressel won gold as part of the 400 freestyle and 400 medley relay teams. Question, who previously held the 100-meter butterfly world record? Answer? Michael Phelps, who said it in 2019, 49.62. Next we go to page 19, primetime. Jake Fromm. His team is the Georgia Bulldogs. His position, quarterback. Spotlight. For the first time, this homegrown star won't have to battle for the starting job. Now the junior quarterback can focus on winning. while still enjoying the occasional fishing break. It's the last day before football workouts begin, and Jake Fromm is cruising down a back road, singing along with country music. He is heading for the Georgia countryside to spend his final morning of freedom fishing on his buddy's farm. He passes cows and haystacks until he reaches the property with the red dirt road. Beyond the main house is a modest pond tucked near the woods. This is Fromm's happy place. This 182-acre farm, about 25 minutes east of the University of Georgia. He started coming here his freshman year, around the time he became the Bulldogs' starting quarterback. "It's definitely an escape for me," he says. Fromm has spent plenty of time on this pond reflecting. In his first 2 years at Georgia, he faced more pressure, more scrutiny than just about anyone in college football. He went through two high-profile quarterback battles. He split practice reps, faced countless headlines about his play, and had to continually fight for his starting job. Each time, Fromm survived and emerged a better player. Battle scars. Fromm grew up in Warner Robins, Georgia, and that's where he learned to fish, hunt, and love football, specifically Bulldog football. His family even built its weekends around watching games. When Jake was a junior at Houston County High, he was a four-star recruit. But Mark Reich, then the Georgia coach, didn't offer him a scholarship. Reich had a signed letter of intent from five-star quarterback Jacob Eason, who was a year older than Fromm. So, in October 2015, Fromm verbally committed to Alabama. Through the recruiting process, the Fromms became particularly close with one assistant, Kirby Smart, the Tide's defensive coordinator. Smart had grown up in Georgia and played for the Bulldogs. Then, a month later, Georgia fired Wright and replaced him with Smart. One of Smart's first acts was making sure that Eason would honor his commitment. Not long after that, though, Smart offered Fromm a scholarship, too. Fromm started campaigning for the job well before enrolling in January 2017. As a high schooler, he'd drive to Athens and sit on the quarterback's meetings. Jake understood what was going on, Smart says. His mindset was, "I'm as smart as those guys. I'm to outwork them, and I'll end up beating somebody out." Fromm graduated from high school a semester early and immersed himself in the playbook. But no amount of studying could make up for a lack of experience, and Eason had that. He had started all but one game the year before in an 8-5 season. Smart named him the starter in July. Not knowing how much he'd played that fall, Fromm began asking around for good hunting spots in the area. The team trainer's son, a walk-on long snapper, mentioned he had a friend with a farm just east of campus. They made plans to go dove hunting the Sunday after Georgia's season opener against Appalachian State. Then on the third drive of the game, Eason sprained a ligament in his left knee, and Fromm took over. He played well enough, 143 yards and one touchdown, to lead Georgia to a 31-10 win. The next day, Fromm woke up early and visited his happy place for the first time. As a freshman, Fromm didn't put up flashy numbers, 2,615 passing yards, 24 touchdowns, a 62.2% completion rate, but he showed poise beyond his years. He had a calming effect on the team, especially in big games. He'd always be walking around singing to himself. It's a habit, a sign he's at ease, and he kept winning, heading the Bulldog to a 13-2 record, including a win over Auburn in the SEC title game. His run culminated with a win over Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl and a trip to the national title game against Alabama. Fromm had a 10-point lead entering the fourth quarter and was positioned to win Georgia's first championship since 1980. But Tua Tagovailoa, Alabama's own true freshman who committed 2 months after Fromm flipped to Georgia, brought the Tide back and stole the moment. Competitive nature. Smart had seen this all unfolding. Fromm pushing Eason out, and he made a contingency plan for Eason's potential departure. Midway through Fromm's breakout season, Smart secured a commitment from the top recruit in the country, a dual-threat quarterback from Kennesaw, Georgia, named Justin Fields. Smart offered him the same opportunity he had presented Fromm, a chance to compete for the job. Both Fields and Fromm felt good about their chances. Those closer to Fromm, though, could tell he wasn't entirely thrilled. Fromm thought he had played well enough to end the competition. He was definitely frustrated at times, says Charlie Warner, Fromm's fishing buddy and a tight end on the team. He wants to be the guy. Fromm improved as a sophomore, throwing for 2,761 yards and 30 touchdowns. But Smart continued rotating in Fields all the way up to the SEC championship game, a rematch against Alabama. The Bulldogs would make the college football playoff if they won, and Fromm played well, throwing for 301 yards and 3 touchdowns. But on 4th and 11 from midfield with 3 minutes and 4 seconds to go in a 28-28 game, Smart subbed in Fields, who had taken 3 snaps all day. Georgia snapped to Fields on what appeared to be a design run, and Alabama swallowed it up. On the next possession, the Tide scored the winning touchdown. At about a month after the Bama loss, Fields announced he would transfer to Ohio State. For the first time since arriving in Athens, Fromm doesn't have to fight for his spot. He's poised to finally topple Alabama, win a national title, and make a run at the Heisman Trophy. "I'm competing with myself now," he says. "There are no more battles, no more controversies to manage." Fromm enters this season with a new kind of pressure, the pressure to deliver as the guy, the only guy. Here has a picture of Fromm on page 21, with the caption, "Captain Hook." A fierce competitor on the field, Fromm unwinds by going to a nearby lake and fishing, another sport in which he's quite skilled. Ready for takeoff. Although the Heisman conversation is focused on Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa and Clemson's Trevor Lawrence, a few electric skill players will give the pair some competition. Rondale Moore, Purdue. As a freshman, Moore broke multiple school records, including all-purpose yards in a season, 2,215. He was named Big Ten Receiver of the Year. The lightning-quick 5'9", 180-pounder might be the most dangerous offensive player in the country. A more experienced Moore will be even more dynamic. Travis Etienne, Clemson. The attention may be on his quarterback, but Etienne is equally important to the team's success. The junior rushed for 1,658 yards, fourth most in the country last year, and scored an NCAA-best 26 total touchdowns. How the Tigers balance the running game with their air attack will dictate his award chances. J.K. Dobbins, Ohio State. Dobbins set a Buckeyes freshman rushing record, 1,403, in 2017, but took a step back last year when Ohio State switched to a pass-heavy offense. With the team breaking in a new quarterback, though, Dobbins should get the majority of the work. He already ranks 19th in school history in yards gained. From the pages of Sports Illustrated. Baseball mud. Mud is a family business. It has been for more than half a century. For decades, baseball's official rule book has required that every ball be rubbed before being used in a game. Bitless mud is the only substance allowed. Originally marked as magic, it's just a little thicker than chocolate pudding with a unique texture. A tiny dab is enough to remove the factory gloss from a new ball without mucking up the seams or getting the cover too filthy. Equipment managers rub it on before every game, allowing pitchers to get a dependable grip. The mud is found only along a short stretch of that tributary of the Delaware, with a precise location kept secret from everyone, including Major League Baseball. The business is small and fundamentally unglamorous. Bentliff harvests the mud himself, using only a shovel and a few buckets, as he had for his entire adult life. Recently, the 62-year-old has begun bringing a trusted assistant to help, but other than that, the process is the same as it has always been. After he collects the mud, he hauls it back to his yard in southern New Jersey, where he sits until he's ready to pack it up in his garage and ship it out to teams. His wife, Joanne, takes orders and does invoicing. That's it. So it shouldn't be surprising that Major League Baseball recently tried to eliminate him, teaming with Rawlings, which manufactures the leather sphere to develop a ball that doesn't need to be enhanced by mud. But baseball is realizing that it isn't so easy to replace Bentliff, and in fact, it might not be possible at all. The mud story does not begin with the Bentliff family. It begins with Ray Chapman, the Cleveland Indians shortstop who was killed by a pitch to the head in 1920, the only major leaguer to die from an injury received during a game. After the tragedy, Major League Baseball tried to improve player safety. It needed something that would help a pitcher's grip without damaging the ball's surface or dirtying it so much that it could be difficult for hitters to see. Teams tried shoe polish, dirt, nothing worked. In the 1930s, though, Philadelphia Athletics third base coach Lena Blackburn found the answer. He rubbed a baseball with mud found near his childhood home in Palmyra, New Jersey. Special mud, smooth, almost creamy, gloppy, without being especially gooey. And, crucially, this mud neither dribbled off nor sat heavy on the cover. Instead, it permeated the cowhide, perfect for improving grip. If you waited just a minute, any lingering muck would fade, and it would be hard to tell that the ball had been treated at all, unless, that is, you were the pitcher, who would immediately be able to feel it. Blackburn brought his find back to the Athletics, and it was an immediate hit. Soon every team wanted some. In order to handle the mud collection, the coach partnered with an old friend of his from New Jersey named John Haas. They called it Magic Mud, and by the 1950s, it was standard for every team to rub it on every single baseball. Haas was Jim Bentliff's grandfather. When Jim was 10, Haas decided that his grandson was ready for his first harvest. The two of them made their way to the secret location on foot and packed the mud into a 5-gallon camping kettle, the start of a lifetime of mud work for Jim. Nearly 50 years later, long after his grandfather and father had died, after siblings had moved far away, Bentliff has never wanted to leave New Jersey, never wanted to quit the business. "I know the mud," he says. "I'm the only one on the planet who does." It isn't simply a matter of shoveling the mud and packing it into tins. No, it's a process, a little art, a little science, plenty of patience. Good mud needs to mature, and it needs to be cleansed. When Bentliff brings the stuff back to his house, he first runs it through a strainer, removing any twigs or leaves. Then it has to sit. Mud is mixed with the right amount of water and deposited into bins the size of trash cans. Over the course of 5 or 6 weeks, Bentliff will siphon off excess liquid and rerun the mud through the strainer. Finally, the water will have fully drained and the mud should be ready. It will feel more like cold cream than pudding. Mix a dollop with a tiny bit of water, or spit, as some equipment managers do, and it will be just perfect for rubbing on a baseball. Mud is not a lucrative business. This might seem simultaneously self-evident and strange. It's mud, but it's an essential piece of the multi-billion-dollar business, a feature without which an official game cannot be played. A can goes for $100, and every team orders 4 per season. Modern baseball has been kind to Bentliff. More home runs and more foul balls mean using more balls, and each additional one requires additional mud. Every time we see a foul ball hit, it's like cha-ching, Joanne says. But you can multiply $100 by 30 teams by 4 annual cans and see that it's only about $12,000, not enough to make anyone rich. Bentliff has worked to expand the business, but this only goes so far. The Bentliff family has never been able to live on mud alone. For decades, Bentliff worked the graveyard shift as a printing press operator, and Joanne was a typesetter for the same company. Now they're both semi-retired, so security is enough to pay the rent, while mud is enough to cover everything else. The last few years have seen Bentley develop a new revenue stream, football. His mud works its magic just as well on a pigskin, removing the factory sheen without doing anything to muck up the laces. Half of the NFL now places annual orders with him. But modest as it is, Bentley's business is facing an existential threat. In 2016, Major League Baseball approached Rawlings about developing a baseball with a naturally improved grip, right out of the wrapper. From Major League Baseball's perspective, there could be several reasons to abandon mud. It would no longer have to be so dependent on Mother Nature, and would no longer have equipment managers rubbing dozens of baseballs in idiosyncratic ways. So Rawlings developed a prototype for Major League Baseball, first tested in the Arizona Fall League in 2016. Bentliff's son, Jason, forwarded him an article about the experimental ball. He said, "What do you want to do?" Bentliff recalls, "I said nothing. I know the mud. I know how the mud works." He does. And Rawlings? Well, it's still trying to learn. "Mud is mud," said Rawlings, Chief Marketing Officer Mike Thompson. "But obviously, mud isn't mud." Rawlings and Major League Baseball have continued to test different options, but they need something that keeps the same standard of playability, that keeps the same color, that doesn't lose its feel when it's thwacked into a catcher's mitt or when it's coated with sweat. Blackburn's mud was originally called Magic, and that seems to be exactly what baseball is searching for 8 decades later. Thompson believes that Rawlings will find an answer, but Bentliff isn't so sure. Nope, can't do it. Bentliff plans to retire, though not necessarily soon. He has, however, determined which of his children will take over. 27-year-old Rachel, the youngest of his four, who loved tagging along with him and playing in the mud from the time she was a little girl. But for now, Bentliff is happy to keep it up. He has a good reason for it, the same reason that his father used to give. It's the only answer that he has and the only one that he wants, for the love of the game. So it shows pictures here on the top of page 23 of dipping the mud, the container that it comes in, putting it on the hand, and then on the baseball. And then shows Mr. Bentliff. After Bentliff gathers his mud, it is strained, mixed with water, and deposited into bins, which sit for weeks before being shipped to ballparks and rubbed on balls. Page 32, The Battle for L.A. Kawhi Leonard, Staples Center Studios, presents This Town Knows a Blockbuster. So it has pictures here of Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, LeBron James. No matter what your taste in movies, the NBA has a story for you, starting with an action thriller in Los Angeles. Hollywood loves retelling familiar tales. Toy Story 4 was one of the summer's biggest hits. Hobbs and Shaw is the 9th entry in the Fast and Furious franchise. There's a pretty good chance you're going to spend a few hours in a theater this winter watching Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. The NBA has been the same way of late. The 2014-15 season brought Warriors. Man, they're good. That was followed and joined by Warriors 2. They're unbeatable, right? Spoiler alert, no. Warriors 3, holy cow, they got better. Warriors 4, this is getting boring. And Warriors 5, they played basketball in Canada? But not anymore. In the past 4 months, Kevin Durant left for Brooklyn, Andre Iguodala was traded to Memphis, and Klay Thompson tore his ACL in the finals. That's not to say that Golden State can be written off. The Dubs still have Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and the best coach in the game, Steve Kerr. But they're not the biggest story. No, for that you have to go to Hollywood itself. That's where you'll find the storyline with a little bit of everything. Drama, action, comedy. "We see you on the Lakers bench," Dwight Howard. "Yes, we're talking about the battle for Los Angeles, waged between the Lakers and the Clippers." Like any good rivalry, there's a big bad. The Lakers have the second best winning percentage in league history, and a plucky underdog, the Clippers, have the second worst. And it certainly makes things more interesting when you consider that the teams share a home arena. While many around the league assumed that the Lakers would land a big star in free agency, the Clippers were the team that came away with the biggest name, Kawhi Leonard, who was joined by Paul George, acquired in a deal with the Thunder. The Lakers now have to be content with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, the latter of whom they acquired in a trade with the Pelicans. If you want to break it down as LeBron Anthony Davis versus Kawhi George, I still think the Clips come out on top, says one NBA coach. But considering their supporting casts and defensive abilities, the coach adds, it's not even close. Advantage, Clippers. Is it possible? The team that has won 5 playoff series in its 49-year existence might actually topple the team with 16 titles? Or will LeBron remind us once again why he's the league's greatest box office attraction? One thing is certain. No matter what happens, we're guaranteed a Hollywood ending. 8 years ago, fate tore them apart. Now they're back, together, and the NBA won't be the same. One of them has a bushy beard, the other is mostly clean-shaven. One is a left-handed scoring machine, the other is a righty triple-double collector. They've got a history together, namely a stint as teammates that didn't end well. They may not have had much in common, but when these two get together, sparks will fly. When the Rockets traded for Oklahoma City's Russell Westbrook, they gave themselves potentially the greatest backcourt in history. Westbrook and James Harden both have MVP trophies, and each has 2 scoring titles. Ever since LeBron James and Chris Bosh joined Dwayne Wade in Miami in 2010, the NBA had been about big threes, but now it's all about dynamic duos. Buddy ball is all the rage as several pairs of leading men will be sharing the spotlight. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving joined forces in Brooklyn. Alas, KD is likely to miss most of the year. Both L.A. teams now have a pair of huge names. And let's not forget the guys who have been together for some time, namely Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum of the Trailblazers. The biggest question when stars align is whether they'll be able to share the ball. That's especially crucial in Houston because Westbrook and Harden, former teammates in Oklahoma City, but never starters together, are both players who love having the rock in their hands. We've been friends for many, many years, since I was 10, actually, Westbrook said. So we played with each other in Oklahoma City, and to be able to win something, you've got to be willing to sacrifice some parts of your game, and we both understand that. In a world where elite talents control the coveted championship rings of power, the only sure path to glory is to patiently await the arrival of a chosen one, a player so transcendent, so phenomenal that he can lift a group of mortals to unimaginable heights. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org.